Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, what is plogging?
Plogging is picking up litter while jogging. So I was like, great, I love the oceans and I don't want litter to get into the sea and I'm already running. So perfect Venn diagram, you know, like when the two circles overlap, plogging just seems to be in the middle.
Running for a very powerful reason.
It drives me to fundraise. It drives me to help other patients who are going to be diagnosed, because there are going to be, unfortunately, many others who have to deal with cancer. And if we can help make their journey through cancer just a little bit easier, then that's why I'm doing this.
And how one running t-shirt can help feed a child.
One t-shirt is worth 1 month's worth of school meals. One hoodie is worth 2 months' worth of school meals. And then, yeah, with this money that's collected through the sales, I personally go to Africa with our selected farm, buy the school meals and deliver the school food ourselves so that we can ensure complete transparency over that transaction.
On this edition of iRun Radio, we'll tell you about runners who clean up their neighborhoods while they're running. Also, a runner who has seen cancer touch her life more than once and is running to raise money for research that will lead to a cure. And how one running t-shirt can feed a child. We'll tell you that story coming up on iRun Radio. We're joined now by the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
How are you this week?
Doing great. Thanks for asking.
It's only a couple of days away from the start of May now. And, you know, it doesn't feel like that long ago I was pranking you on April Fool's Day and saying that I wasn't going to run the Boston Marathon with you after all. And now it's going to be May the 1st, and we've gotten a cold and rainy early start to spring out of the way, and we're looking forward to warmer weather, and we're heading into the month when a lot of the big races happen in this country.
Yeah, it's an exciting time to be a runner. I know myself, and I know you, and I know many of our listeners are going to be ready to toe that starting line.
Yeah, so we've got Vancouver coming up this month. We've got Calgary. We have Ottawa Race Weekend, of course, where I'll be running. What are your plans?
Well, I'm going to do the Toronto Marathon, and I'm going to do, I don't know if I'm going to do the marathon or the half. You know, I don't know. I don't know how much my body can take, but I'm certainly going to do something with the Toronto Marathon, and then I'm going to bounce back and do the Ottawa Marathon. So maybe I'll do the half in Toronto and the full in Ottawa. I just love that marathon in Ottawa.
Yeah, and I'll be doing the marathon in Ottawa as well, but I'll be doing the television coverage, and then I'll be starting 3 hours after everybody else and running the marathon course before it all shuts down, because you've got 7 hours to run the course, and I'm going to be starting 3 hours late, in part because I'm doing the television coverage and also part of this theme that I've been talking about lately. I did a TEDx talk about it, how some people in life start a lot farther back than others and don't really have a chance to catch up. So I'm going to run this marathon as kind of a way of illustrating that. So looking forward to that experience coming up at the end of May.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. That's such an exciting thing. I know we're going to give that coverage, and maybe at some point I could find you on the course or follow you, or certainly try to keep up with your
if you've got some energy left, you could come back and get me at some point.
That is awesome. Yeah. I'm glad you're doing that. And by that TED Talk, by the way, I still think about that. That's for anyone who hasn't listened to that yet or watched it, it's quite moving and quite powerful.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I think it's an important message, so I'm glad I had the chance to share it. And look, when you talk of the Toronto Marathon that happens every May now, it makes me think about what happened this week in Toronto, because, of course, the Toronto Marathon starts at Mel Lastman Square up at near Yonge and Sheppard, where this week there was a horrible act of violence that took place where someone drove a van onto the sidewalk and killed 10 people and injured a lot of other people, and that's right where the Toronto Marathon starts. So I was thinking a lot about that area this week and how I did the half marathon there going back a few years, and I remember that spot, that starting point, where there were a lot of people standing around feeling optimistic and feeling happy, just like there would have been on Monday of last week when the sun was shining and the temperature was warm for the first time this spring in Toronto, and this horrible thing took place.
You know, that's another thing you don't want to minimize what happened, but for anybody feeling race nerves or for anybody, you know, oh, I don't know what I should eat. Should I do one more long run and this and that? You start getting yourself confused and getting yourself worked up. I mean, it goes back to your talk too. Be appreciative. I mean, there's gratitude. This is a wonderful thing that we have, and the world is a difficult place, increasingly so. You know, I think being appreciative of the opportunities that we have is a great thing to fuel the body on a run and not on a run, too.
Yeah, we're lucky to be alive. We're lucky to be runners. We're lucky to live in warm and loving and supportive communities like Toronto, in a great country like Canada. So there are lots of blessings we can be counting at a time like this. Do you have any last-minute advice for runners who are into the final stretch here, doing their final long runs before some of these big events this coming up in the next month in Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver, Ottawa?
A big one would be don't overdo it. Don't overdo it. I mean, you know, I've got friends and they have goals and the race is coming and they've trained hard. You know, I think less is more. Less is more. Yeah. You're not going to do anything 2 weeks prior to your race that you haven't done yet. Better off doing less, you know, and if you're nervous about anything, watch your diet, but don't run more. You don't need any more speed work. Chill out on your mileage and just concentrate on relaxing and, you know, really less is more. And if you're not trained up, set realistic goals. You know, there's no reason to go out there and hope for a miracle, you know, and set yourself up to be disappointed. So I would just take a load off, make realistic goals, and go into it with a positive frame of mind.
Right on. And I think that's very well said. And I always tell people, the closer you get to race day, the more you can do to screw up your half marathon or your marathon, and the less you can do to improve it, right?
So, there it is. Yeah, there it is.
So patience and calmness are important at this time. Right
and
on.
Know that you'll be back again. You can always do these things again. There's a million of them. You know, it's not one and done. Like, they're always out there for you.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Absolutely. All right, Ben, thank you for joining us once again this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, my friend.
That's Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, we'll tell you all about clogging. Canada's longest running marathon, the Scotiabank Calgary Marathon, is a challenging, competitive, and fun event with a race designed for everyone of any level. Register now at calgarymarathon.com and experience the vibrancy of Calgary on May 27th. Welcome back to iRun Radio. We're on the air every Sunday morning on 1310 News in Ottawa, and you can listen to the podcast and check out past editions of the show at iRun.ca. Just click on radio. Well, what is plogging? It's running and picking up litter at the same time. And Melanie Knight does it all the time. Melanie, welcome to iRun Radio.
Thank you so much, Mark, for having me. I'm excited.
So let's talk about plogging. When did you first hear about this?
Plogging. Yes, I heard about it on Facebook. A friend of mine sent me a post, and it sounded so easy and so obvious. I was like, that sounds great. So plogging is picking up litter while jogging. So I was like, great, I love the oceans and I don't want litter to get into the sea and I'm already running. So perfect Venn diagram, you know, like when the two circles overlap, plogging just seemed to be in the middle.
Right. And so what did you do from there? And tell me what a typical run might be like for you when you are picking up litter as you are running.
Yes. So I have my gloves, my kind of gardening gloves that I picked up at the dollar store, and a paper bag so that I'm not using more plastic. So I bring a paper bag along with me. I fold it up. I just bring them both in my hand. And I normally, you know, start plogging as soon as I see my first piece of garbage. And so sometimes that's directly in front of my front door as I live downtown Vancouver. And then other times I intentionally run to a location where I think might be kind of more littered. And then I start there. And so what I've been doing is a 10-minute tidy. So I don't clean up garbage the entire run, or else I really wouldn't go very far or get much of a run in. And so, especially living in downtown. And so for that reason, I just kind of run to my start point. I ask Furry to turn on the timer, and then I tidy for 10 minutes while I run.
Okay, so that's how you basically how you stop it from completely taking over your run, right? That's one of the questions I had, because I could see a situation where you're not doing much running because you're just kind of running every 10 feet and then stopping and picking something up.
Right, exactly. So to get the run in, I either like run to the, you know, dirty spot and then start tidy for 10 minutes. And then I stop, I try and find the nearest garbage can or recycling bin, and I divert the garbage as best I can. And then I keep running just with my gloves still in my hand. And so there are some times for sure where it's hard to stop. And if the bag is still in my hand, then I'll keep cleaning even after the timer goes off. But generally, yeah, exactly. You have to stop at some point to kind of get your heart rate back up.
Yeah. Now, at a certain point, you must, when I was thinking about what you do, you must see the garbage and the litter everywhere when you're running, even if you're not actually stopping to pick it up. Once you start looking for it, you're going to notice it all the time, right?
You're exactly right. Honestly, it's to the point now where I wish I had a bag in my hand at all times. Like, regardless if I'm walking to work in my heels or if I'm running the seawall, it has been very difficult for me to now, like, shut down the, you know, looking. I can't stop seeing it. And, we live in Vancouver. It's a beautiful city. And before this challenge, this 30-day challenge that I did for the month of March, I didn't think that it would be that big a deal. I thought that, sure, I'd find a couple pieces per run. And it's been eye-opening.
Yeah. So tell me about the 30-day challenge.
Mm-hmm. So I got the message on Facebook from a friend of mine. And at that time, I was actually looking for a 30-day challenge. And recently, I hurt my back. And so I've been kind of easing my way back into half marathon training for this year. And so I was just looking for a way to kind of get out more frequently, but not for super long runs. And so, you know, just like a half an hour to an hour long run, kind of easy. And this was my way of doing that, but while also, you know, helping the planet. I'm a marine biologist, so I really am. It's important for me that the oceans stay clean. And often a lot of the garbage that ends up in the sea is coming from our day-to-day habits. So yeah, there's lots of marine debris that comes from fishing gear and nets, but the majority of our plastics that spill up in the sea are the things that we use every day. And that's getting into the ocean by going through our storm drains. So if we can stop it from going through our storm drains, then it stops it from getting into the sea. And I think that's really where that was kind of my preventative action. So, and again, trying to make sure that I was still running, I just limited it down to a 10-minute tidy. My mom used to always sing this like tidy up song, and it was like this 10-minute tidy song that she used to sing to us when we were young to like get us to clean up our rooms. And it just made sense that it was like a 10-minute tidy, kind of inspired by my mom, as well as this new plogging trend that was hitting Facebook so much.
Yeah. So how did the song go?
It was like, I don't want to sing it.
Well, you just say the words.
Like,
yeah.
It was like, clean up quietly. I don't know. And then like, everybody do their share. And then whatever. And then it went on.
Yeah. Okay. So you must have that going through your head when you're running.
Yeah, exactly. And it's true. Like, clean up, like, everybody do your share. It really is. There's a great quote. I forget who it's from, but it's like, if everyone cleaned up their front stoop, then the world would be clean. And this is my way of just doing that.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you're making a huge difference. And if you're doing this, how many times a week are you doing it?
So for the 30-day challenge for the month of March, I did it every day.
Wow.
30 days, 10 minutes a day. And sometimes I got to admit, sometimes I wasn't running. I was just walking my dog. But I'd say 70% of those days I was going for a run and I stopped for 10 minutes and did the plogging. But yeah, now that it's like into April, I've still been plogging every day.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to stop. It's kind of been addictive. And now it's becoming a habit, even if it's not necessarily for the full 10 minutes and some days, you know, it's for longer. It kind of depends on the day, but it's becoming something that's definitely part of my ritual now.
So you're making a huge difference because, you know, just in March, for example, you did it for at least 300 minutes, which is 5 hours of going around and picking up litter. And you don't, you know, it adds up, right? If you're doing 10 minutes a day, that's, you don't think of it as adding up to 5 hours, but you spent 5 hours or more in the month of March picking up litter.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's been great. And yeah, it's so easy. I mean, 10 minutes goes by in a flash. So when I'm running, you know, it's 10 minutes, the timer goes off and I'm like, oh, 30 minutes, 10 minutes. Okay, well, here we go. Back we run. And it really hasn't been an impediment on my training. And it feels awesome, actually. It feels really good to be able to run that same loop or run that same distance the next day and see that it's cleaner. You know, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. And how many other people do you know of who are doing this?
Oh, my goodness. Mark, it is taking off. So we are seeing plogging groups across Canada first. Calgary has an awesome group called Plogging YYC. If you can find them on Instagram, Heidi is leading it up and she's doing an awesome job. There's a group in Edmonton, Halifax, and a group that I'm trying to get going in St. John's with friends of mine who live there. And I think every city could really benefit from this. That's just in Canada, though. If we think about, if you go onto Instagram, there is plogging, insert country or city name here, there for every single place you can think of. Mexico, Italy, Colombia, like India, they're everywhere. Every city, Milan and Cairo, like there are plogging groups popping up all over their Instagram. And it really is, seems to be where the ploggers seem to be kind of showing their collections and kind of getting people to get together in groups and do this. And the people are sharing stories every single day about their plogging adventures. And it's been so fun to get to talk to them and hear about what they found and how many people they had at their most recent event. It's been awesome.
And do you ever do it with others? Do you ever go out with a group and do it together?
Yeah. So I was posting pictures every day on Instagram, and I was able to recruit friends of mine and family, and my sisters live in the city. So my husband came along with me and my dog came along on several of them. So yeah, definitely. But I think the thing is that with plogging is that I'm a pretty solo runner. So for those proper runs, I really didn't bring anyone with me, and that's kind of the difference between normal shoreline cleanups. You know, shoreline cleanups are with large groups. And, you know, they make a big event of them and it gets lots of people out and you kind of spend half a day or several hours doing this. But I think with plogging, the alternative to that is, you know, this can be something that you just do without any warning. You just kind of pick up a bag, grab some gloves, go for your run and just do it quietly. Just do it as you. And it doesn't have to be like a large production. You can just build it into your run. And I think for that reason, it seemed more accessible to me. That way I didn't have to do a lot of planning or, you know, make sure that I set up a time and place to meet up with somebody that might not pull through. It was just something I could do by myself.
And what's the most interesting thing that you've found while plogging?
Okay, so there was the Rugby Sevens was an event that was held here in Vancouver, which is like a big rugby event. And for some reason, the tradition is that everyone dresses up in costumes. And so that day that it was on, I did recruit my sister and her and I went plogging together that day. And I said, let's totally go down near the stadium. I bet there's going to be tons of garbage. And there was. It was bananas. There was, by far, we filled up more the bag more than we ever had in 10 minutes that day. But what was amazing is that we found this really crazy costume, this cow costume that somebody had clearly just taken off and just chucked on the side of the road. And so I like picked it up and I was like, is it garbage if you want it?
Who doesn't want a cow costume?
I know, it's so cool. It was just like a really simple like cloth cow costume, but it looks really funny and I didn't put it on and I didn't take it home, but it was made for a pretty funny Instagram post.
Sure.
So that was the funniest thing we found.
So I should ask you while we're talking, what are some of your running goals outside of cleaning up the world and making it neater and tidier and more beautiful? Right. What have you done as a runner and what do you hope to do?
Mm-hmm. So I love half marathons. That's definitely my distance of choice. I've never done a marathon and I probably never will. although I admire those who do that distance. But yeah, half marathons is more my jam. I have recently been working on a back issue and back injury and so recovering from that. So I've done dozens of half marathons in the past. I'm not sure how many. And now is the point where I'm trying to get back up to that speed again. So a half marathon this summer would be amazing. I've done several triathlons. I'd love to do one of those again for back health to kind of make sure that I'm doing lots of cross training as needed throughout the season. So triathlon and a half marathon this summer is my plan.
All right. Well, good luck with that. And thank you for what you're doing to make the world a more beautiful place. You're making a huge difference. And I'm sure sometimes because you're seeing it everywhere around you, it probably feels like you're just making a small dent in things. But when you add up all the time that you've spent doing this and how that garbage would still be there if it wasn't for you, it's really remarkable. So thanks for doing that. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. And thanks so much for helping me get the word out. Again, if anyone's listening who's interested in plogging, just go ahead and do it. Make it a 10-minute tidy if that's easier for you to wrap your head around. And I highly encourage, again, it doesn't have to just be me doing this and the groups that are going ahead. If you're in a city that doesn't already have a plogging team or Instagram handle, start one. And I think that's the way that we can get this momentum building.
Very cool.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Melanie.
Thanks. Have a good day.
That's Melanie Knight, who is a plogger. Coming up next, running for cancer research. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge. Four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. Shelley McLean and I worked together for a long time in radio. She's now doing great work at the Ottawa Hospital Foundation. And this year, she has her own story of why she's running at Ottawa Race Weekend and raising money for cancer research at the Ottawa Hospital. Shelley, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem, Mark. Great to be here.
So let's go back to how your running career began. I remember when you weren't a runner and you decided to start running. And it wasn't because you were interested in running so much as you were interested in raising money, right?
That's right. So my father passed away from bile duct cancer in 2009, and there were no treatment options for him. And after his death, obviously, it was very difficult for the family. It was difficult on me. I felt he had been taken from us too soon. And the following spring, our former colleague, actually, Steve Madeley, was raising money for the Ottawa Hospital at Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. And he was forming a team to be a part of the Ottawa Hospital's Run for a Reason. So, as you know, there's a big charity component to Race Weekend. And he was raising money, and he asked me if I would be interested in joining his team and helping support the Ottawa Hospital and cancer research in particular. And I said, well, I don't run. I did track and field in high school and short distance running, but, you know, I wasn't much of a runner at that point in my life. I was 38, 39 at the time. And he said, well, you don't have to run. You can just walk. I'm walking 10K. And so I said, okay, why not, you know? So that year, I signed up to be a part of the 10K at Race Weekend. And as I was training, you could say, you know, I was getting out, walking, I was finding it a little dull, to be honest. And when Race Weekend came along, we all got together. It was really exciting to be a part of this team and know we were doing something for a good cause. But I started out on the 10K route, and I saw all these people running beside me. I was like, this is exciting. I can't walk 10K. I have to get moving, you know. So I started doing a bit of running in between my walks as we were doing the 10K. And when I crossed the finish line that year, I said to myself, that was fun, but next year I'm running the full 10K. And so I haven't stopped since. I've just kept on pursuing running over the years. And I think it was 3 years ago at Race Weekend, I ran my first half marathon.
Right on.
Yeah, so it's something that... running not only made me, you know, got me in shape and made me feel better, not only physically, but emotionally too. It helped me through a really challenging time in my life. When I was angry and frustrated and, you know, all these emotions going on inside of me, dealing with the death of my dad, and it just gave me an opportunity really to get out and clear my mind and feel better and feel healthy. So it was kind of a twofold experience for me, how I started running.
Yeah, and I can remember you talking about it and about how great you felt when you went out for a run, and
yeah,
even if it was not a very long run. And then for a time, I think you had a bit of an injury and you had to give it up for a little while you recovered, and I remember you missed it a lot.
Yeah, I went through actually stress fractures in both of my shins now, and when I wasn't able to run, I was really upset about it, because I finally found something that I really enjoyed doing that was good for my health, was good for my mind, but I wasn't able to run anymore, and I thought, well, maybe I have to give it up. And so I started cycling, but cycling didn't do it for me. So I went to physiotherapy, I went to a sports doctor, I got a lot of help, and I'm back running again. I was kind of hoping this year for Race Weekend I might be doing the half marathon, but a bit of a backstory there, and I'm running 5K this year.
Right, but you're running 5K with your daughter, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. She started running with me 3 years ago. She showed interest in getting out and going on training runs for me. And so for the past 2 years, she's done the 5K race for me. This year, I was all set to start training for another half marathon. But then she said, are we doing 5K again this year? And how can you turn down that
Absolutely.
Offer from your 11-year-old, right? So it's something that we're now bonding together doing as we're training for race weekend.
All right. And tell me about the half marathon and how that felt to complete that.
Well, it was funny because you had actually convinced me that I was ready for a half marathon after doing so many 10K races. And because 10K, it does turn into a race for you, really, you know, like you really want to do better your time each time you go out there.
You have to push yourself in a 10K.
Yeah, you really do. And I suppose you do after you've done a few half marathons as well. But you convinced me that I was ready with the time that I was running, that I was ready for half marathon. I thought you were crazy, but I said, okay, I'll give it a try. So I did the training for the half marathon. I'm not going to lie, that took a lot of time, and I found it a bit difficult to fit in all the training each week, but enjoyed the experience. And when I got out there on race weekend 3 years ago, I guess it was, and 4 years ago, I did the half marathon, and it was my best running experience ever. It was a phenomenal way to see our city. I loved the experience. I felt good the whole way through because I wasn't really pushing myself too hard, but I guess the training really worked out well, and it was an overall just a fantastic experience, and I can't wait to do the next half marathon.
Right on. And I'm sure there is one in the very near future for you.
Yeah.
But let's talk about why you're running this 5K. And by the way, as an aside, of course, we've talked about this before, but my father died of exactly the same cancer as your father.
Yeah.
And so we both have been through that experience. And now cancer has been back in your life, unfortunately, because your husband was diagnosed with cancer not too long ago.
Yeah, so every year since my dad passed away, and even before my dad passed away, I was supporting cancer research. I started out, though, with a national organization, but then after my dad, I brought it down to the local level, keeping the funding in Ottawa to support doctors and researchers here in Ottawa at the Ottawa Hospital. And so I've been fundraising for cancer research every year since then. But this past September, our family was dealt a shocking blow when my husband was diagnosed with colon cancer. And he had been having some symptoms the previous winter and had a reactive colonoscopy. It took a long time to get the results for that colonoscopy, but when we did, we were told that it was colon cancer. And basically what he had to go through was he had his surgery less than a month after being told he had cancer. And then after the surgery, that's when we were told that it was a stage 3 cancer, colon cancer. And as a result of that, chemotherapy treatment was recommended. And Mark, I don't know really what was worse, to be honest with you, being told that he had cancer or being told that he had to go through chemotherapy treatment, because it was just so hard to imagine him having to go through, the brutal effects of chemotherapy, you know, and I've seen so many people have to go through it, and I've just been hoping and praying that that wouldn't have happened to him. But on the flip side, you know, we were so grateful that there were options, whereas, you know, years ago when it came to my dad and your dad, treatment options for bile duct cancer weren't really effective. And so at least there were options for Darcy. And so he went through a chemotherapy treatment. He was to have 12 treatments, but by winter he became very, very sick. And after treatment number 8, they stopped chemotherapy and took a break, and then just told him that they're going to end treatments. And now since he's ended chemotherapy, he's started to bounce back. He's feeling a little bit better, slowly but surely. He's gaining his weight back, and we just recently had an MRI scan done, and it gave us some good news. So we're grateful.
Okay.
It's still a long road of recovery for him. He has some side effects from chemotherapy treatment, neuropathy, so sensitivities in his fingertips. He has a hard time buttoning up his shirts or taking the cap off the toothpaste and little things like that. They say that, you know, that can go away with time, but for other patients, it's something that's just a prolonged after effect from chemotherapy treatment.
But it sounds like things are going in the right direction, and I think...
Yeah, things are going in the right direction. We feel really good after getting the good news from clear MRI results. But that's just all of this experience that we went through with Darcy. It's just re-emphasized to me the need to support cancer research, the need to support the researchers right here in our own community at the Ottawa Hospital. That's what drives me right now. You know, it drives me to fundraise. It drives me to help other patients who are going to be diagnosed, because there are going to be, unfortunately, many others who have to deal with cancer. And if we can help make their journey through cancer just a little bit easier, then that's why I'm doing this.
Right on. Well, I wish you the very best of luck in your fundraising and in the 5K that you're going to be running with your daughter, Grace, and the best to your husband, Darcy, as well. Shelley, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, Mark.
That's Shelley McLean, who's going to be running at Ottawa Race Weekend and raising money for cancer research at the Ottawa Hospital. Coming up next, how one running T-shirt can feed a child for a month.
Canada's longest running marathon, the Scotiabank Calgary Marathon, is a challenging, competitive, and fun event with a race designed for everyone of any level. Register now at calgarymarathon.com and experience the vibrancy of Calgary on May 27th. Chris Cooper is the founder of Runner's Heel. That's an organization that's selling running gear and using the proceeds to feed children in East Africa. Chris, it's great to talk to you. Congratulations on all the work that you're doing. Thank you for joining us on iRunRadio.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. So tell us a little bit about how Runner's Heel got started. What was the spark that caused all of this to happen?
To be honest with you, it was a little bit of an accident. Nearly a year ago now, last April, I went on a running holiday to Kenya. And just before my visit to Kenya, I made a decision to take a donation for some school meals, because obviously the problems in Africa are well documented. So I took a little bit of money. And on the first day of being in Kenya, I bought some food and took it to a school. And then, to be honest with you, what I found in the school and what I found in the surroundings near the school made me quite shocked. And from that moment on, I knew that I wanted to do something that could help. So what was an initially planned running holiday ended up being more of a planning for the future on how I can help this particular community.
All right. And tell me a little bit about your running background before that and how you ended up making this trip to Kenya.
And to be really honest with you, I'm not a great runner. I spent most of my life playing sports, but not running races. I am manager of a gym. That's my full-time job. So I spend more of my time in the weights room. But I got myself quite sick a couple of years ago. I actually got double pneumonia. And from that point, I was quite scared and realized that I wanted to make a change in my health. So I kind of dropped down the weight, so to speak, and took up running because I wanted to sort out my cardiovascular system. Took up running, and by nature of me, got quite hooked on running and started studying running a little bit, watching some documentaries. That's where I came about the Kenyan way of running, and that's what led to me going on a holiday there.
And what were you hoping to accomplish by going to Kenya? I mean, obviously, it is many people describe it as kind of the cradle of long distance running. It's part of the culture there. But what did you want to get out of it personally?
Yeah, you know, I mean, part of my research, kind of the lead up to it was the well documented British runner Mo Farah. I read a book of his, and he talks about spending time with Kenyans in London. And then I picked up a book, which is probably my favorite book. It's called Running with the Kenyans. And I read this book kind of front to back within a day, fell in love with it. And it's basically the story of a guy that takes his family to a town in Kenya called Witen, which is the high altitude famous running town of the country. And he documents his journey in this book of his experiences. And I just thought to myself, you know what, I want to go and experience that myself. And it's one thing reading it, another thing actually being there.
And I guess what you just said there applies to your perspective on Africa and to the situation in Kenya as well. It's one thing reading about it. It's another thing being there and experiencing it. And so tell me what you went through when you delivered food to this school and you realized that the situation was really quite dire.
Yeah, you know, I think you just touched on it. Then it's one thing reading it or seeing it on the television. It's another thing being there and seeing it, smelling it, talking about it. You know, the day when I took the food to the school, it's kind of a 1 hour drive from Iten. Iten is not a poor place in Kenyan terms. It's a poor place compared to what you and I know, but it's not poor from African standards. But the place where I took the school food is poor. It's a good hour drive into semi-arid lands, dry lands. And on the way to the school, I just saw literally people lying on the floor dying. I have no other way of sugarcoating what I saw or describing it any different. And actually, you know, I took the food to the school, and just after the school visit, a young boy walked past the car I was in, carrying another boy to what's called the dispensary. It's like a small medical unit down there in this valley, which looked quite disturbing to me. And then kind of 2 minutes later, a group of people ran out of this medical unit towards our car because they wanted to use the car to actually tell the boy that he was carrying had died. And the other boy that was actually doing the carrying had brought him for kind of 10 kilometers on his back to try and bring him medical attention, not realizing that he had died. This was like 2 hours of me being into Africa. This is what greeted me as I arrived, and it was heartbreaking to see. And then, you know, to continue with this story a little bit more, we actually drove to where this boy lived, and I was with this school teacher at the time. And he went to break the news to the family. Obviously, I didn't want to be a part of that, so I kept around the corner, a little bit emotional myself, but just keeping out the way of that conversation and looking in the other direction, I was seeing more and more people in dire situations that I actually just could not walk away from. It's making me emotional. Yeah. Just
I'm sure it is. Yeah, that's very, very disturbing and powerful. So what did you decide to do about it, and how did you get from there to creating Runner's Heel?
You know, I mean, short term, literally, there was a couple of people that I tried to rescue. Barry used that word. I funded a couple of ambulances to come down, get them, take them to local hospitals. I didn't have enough money for some of them, so I ran a couple of crowdfunding campaigns during my holiday, which covered the costs for some seriously kind of traumatic sites that I'd seen. So yeah, that then led me to think, okay, you know, at this stage, I think I had around 1,000 Instagram followers. I'd, you know, obviously got my friends and family back in Europe. But I noticed that, you know, the running community, once it gets behind something, is really quite helpful and a strong power. And that then set the seed for me to think, okay, what if I could use the kind of power of running, the power of the running community to help on a more long-term, sustainable basis. So, a few days later, a few more thoughts, plenty of notepads filled, and I kind of came up with the idea of Runner's Heel, H-E-A-L, of course. And, that kind of started the wheels in motion of what ended up being a much larger story.
Yeah, so tell us how it works. What does Runner's Heel do? I know it's about delivering meals and education to children in Africa, but how do you do that?
Yeah, you know, to give you a bit of context, on the airplane on the way back from Kenya, that first visit, I sat next to a gentleman, an elder gentleman. He was a chairman of a charity, and I asked him for advice. I was lucky to spend 9 hours with him on the flight, and we talked about what I'd seen, the various different problems that I'd come across. And one thing that he said to me was, you can't change the world, so just pick one focus, pick one thing that you want to assist in and go at that. And, you know, the two of us brainstormed together, and thanks to his advice, thanks to some documentaries I'd seen previously, the idea of school meals came up. And what we felt was that if we could provide more school meals into schools, because these schools were not, you know, were not affording to feed the kids. Kids were going to school hungry. Therefore, they were not going to school because they had no real motivation to go to school. You know, to walk for an hour to get to school when there's no food there meant that attendances were like an all-time low. We felt that, you know, what if we can get meals into these schools, it would drive attendance, therefore improve education levels, therefore, in the long term, hopefully give these children more hope, because lack of education is not ideal down there. So, yeah, that's how that kind of the idea came about. And how does it work exactly? Well, rather than being a charity where, you know, we ask for donations, we live off donations, we're officially a social enterprise, so a clothing company. But for each item of clothing that we sell, we promise to deliver a certain amount of school meals. So, for example, one T-shirt is worth 1 month's worth of school meals. One hoodie is worth 2 months' worth of school meal. And then, with this money that's collected through the sales, I personally go to Africa with our selected farm, buy the school meals and deliver the school food ourselves so that we can ensure complete transparency over that transaction, that process.
So you sell a T-shirt and that feeds a child for a month in Africa, basically.
Exactly. It feeds them for a month with the school meals.
And so far, I know you set a target initially. How many school meals have you provided?
We are very close to 100,000. We broke the 90,000 mark about three weeks ago. And like in my head, it would be really great if we could reach 100,000 when it's been 1 year. Which my visit to Kenya was just after the London Marathon, which is middle of April. So we're getting close to a year. It's going to be close, but 100,000 meals.
That's amazing. And obviously, if people want to help and support this, they can go to your website to find out more.
Yeah, they can go to runnersheal.org, or what most people tend to do these days is check us out on Instagram, which is our biggest platform. So it's simply at runnersheal on Instagram. And there you can see the amount of guys across the world that are buying these T-shirts and pictures of them wearing the brand of Pride, which is something that is really special for me to see every day, different people uploading these photos all day.
That's incredible. Well, Chris, congratulations on what you've done. It's so powerful. It's making a huge difference, and I wish you the best of luck. I'm sure this is just the beginning. 100,000 is a phenomenal number, but I bet you're pretty soon we're going to be talking about much bigger numbers than that. Thank you so much for what you're doing, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having us, and all the best to you across the water.
That is Chris Cooper, the founder of Runner's Heel. Coming up on next week's show, more inspiring stories of runners who are making a difference in the world. And we'll check in once again with John Stanton, founder of The Running Room. I hope you can join us then. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.